Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino. Elizabeth is the CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network, a leading multimedia provider of lifestyle content. The Best Ever You Network, helping you live your life to the fullest. It's where you'll find inspirational and encouraging stories, advice, and information with our radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. Real people, real advice, real places, real products and businesses, real life stories, and more, including real celebrity life. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You. Now, here's your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino.
Okay, so the coolest thing about our guest today is that the whole time that was playing, I could feel him rewriting it. I can feel him changing it. That's my favorite thing about Fred Coyer, who's with me today. He is the CEO of Diamond Cutters International. But, you know, what I love about him is he might be the CEO of this one company, but he's kind of like the CEO to all of us who are trying to do all the things he's trying to do. I mean, he can get on the phone with you like I'm doing here for an hour, but it feels more like it's kind of just one of our regular chats. So welcome.
Hi, Elizabeth.
How are you today?
This is the real Fred Coyer.
Yes, it is. It is you. We are here for what?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, I feel like we need to, you know, clarify that too, because, you know, you're on Twitter and there's like a couple hundred thousand people following you on Twitter. And I want people to know that's really you.
Nobody thinks it is. Everybody, you know, sometimes we'll chat with some people and they'll say, hey, just between you and me, who is this? I know you must have been hired or something like this. And I'm like, no, it's really me. And sometimes I'm like, God, you really are good at your job. Boy, Fred must be paying you some good money. And I'm like, no. I mean, finally I just say, you got me. It's not really Fred. Oh, I knew it.
No, but, you know, okay, so let's go to Twitter for 1 minute because it is a really big part of your life. And, we'll backtrack all the things that you've done in the universe, but I really want to focus on Twitter for a minute because, you didn't buy followers. You know, you can go on there and, you know, spend $89 for a couple hundred.
I leased them, yeah.
You leased them. That's funny.
I have to buy, though. So at the end, I can have ownership.
Totally. But I love what you do on there. You really acknowledge everybody on there. How do you spend time doing that every day with everything you have going on?
Well, if you go back a few years ago, I went to one of these TED Med events, these kind of cool events in on the West Coast. And I'm 48. I'm going to be 50 in a couple years, and so I guess this was maybe when I was 44, 43 or something. And I'm a little fuddy-duddy when it comes to necessarily understanding how the internet works. I'll go into the next room and I'll go to Dee, who's one of the people who works with me, and I'll say, Dee, my computer's not working. And she'll walk over and she'll turn on the on button. She goes, that's it. That's all. It's just, And I'm like, oh,
power.
Thanks, Dee. Yeah, power. Wow. I knew it was something. I knew I should figure it out. So I was on the West Coast, and I met this guy named Ken Rakowski, who's this big, intellectual giant. And he said, okay, Fred, we gotta exchange on Facebook. We gotta connect on Twitter. And I'm like, man, I just don't have time for that stuff. And he goes like, no, my God, it's the new platform. It's where everybody's talking. He went on and on and on and on. And I said, boy, this guy's really, really pumped up about this stuff. So I came back to Houston, and I just said, well, like I do with anything that I don't know, I went and to Amazon. I got a couple of books and I read them, and I was like, wow, I just, And then I thought, okay, well, I can't put all my energy into Facebook and Twitter. So I spent a little bit of time with Facebook, and then I just said, okay, I'm just going to focus on Twitter. And I don't know if your audience knows this, but one of the things that I do is that I'm an observational consultant, which is the coolest job in the world, which means people hire me just to give my opinion of what I'm seeing. And so a lot of people can look at something, but not everybody sees it. Sometimes I see stuff that other people don't see. Mm-hmm. And so I thought to myself, well, gosh, if this Twitter thing really is legitimate, then I should be able to just kind of tweet about stuff that I see, observations, stuff that I would normally charge for a client, and I'll just put these things on Twitter and see what happens. And, you know, here it is a few years later, I wake up, and, you know, a fair amount of people are following me, and I think it's cool. I've had the honor of meeting you and so many cool people. I was in Harlem a week ago talking to these wonderful kids, and none of that would have happened if it wasn't for the fact that I met this lady who said, can you come talk to our kids? They need some help and they need some guidance. Will you come here and talk to these folks? And I said, absolutely. So, yeah, to me, Twitter is just like this super cool thing that kind of brings everything in one place. It's really neat.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? The people that you... What's fascinating to me is how you can connect and find the people that you love via an electronic thing in 160 characters. But you really can whittle it down to finding people that are just like you or have the same goals or have the... It's baffling, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I remember one time I went to visit a friend of mine who was a musician, and there was nobody there. It was just him on the stage and stuff. And I said to him, I said, man, it's really cool what you do. It's just when you start playing and you start, you know, on stage, everybody just tunes into you, and it's so incredible. And he says, well, you know, Fred, that's the right word. We get tuned in to the same frequency. And he says, let me show you something. And he says, watch this. And he had a bunch of guitars out. Like if one guitar, like a string were to break, he has to have a backup guitar. So it was just me and him. And he takes a guitar and he placed it on one end of the stage. And, you know, like on one of those guitar rack things. And then he went and put the other one. He said, now, these are both perfectly tuned. I tuned them before you came. And I said, okay. He says, well, what I want you to do, Fred, is I want you to walk across the stage and I want you to stand by the other guitar. And I went, okay. So I went and stood by the other guitar. He goes, now watch what I'm going to do. I'm going to pluck one of these strings on this guitar, and you tell me if the same string on the other guitar vibrates at the exact same time I pluck it. And I'm like, okay. He plucks it, and sure enough, now I don't know if it was the exact same time. Maybe it was like a half a second or a quarter second later, but sure enough, it vibrated. And he said, Fred, that's the cool thing about music is that, or anytime someone's communicating with somebody, if you've got love or compassion or gratitude in your heart, the love and gratitude and compassion that exists in everybody, it hits that frequency and you become centered with them. No different than if somebody is hateful or angry or upset and you're around them, pretty soon you're like, geez, I'm getting a little angry. I'm getting a little upset. And they strike the wrong chord in you and stuff like that. So, yeah, Twitter is this. It doesn't take very long, at least it didn't for me, before I found it like-minded people that we just seem to resonate, you know.
Yeah.
And I'd be lying if I said I have 200,000 friends on Twitter. No, I don't. But I can tell you that I've met 30, 40, 50, 100 maybe of people that I am really good friends with. Yeah, I don't know if you know Dave Carpenter. When I was in New York, I had breakfast with him, and we sat down, we talked. He told me about his philosophy of life and what he was doing. None of this would have happened if I hadn't met him on Twitter. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the way life is going these days. That's the way I feel, too. It's like none of this would have happened without Facebook or Twitter. We wouldn't be having this conversation right now. Nothing. So, yeah, it's neat, and you have to kind of follow your let's talk about instincts and things like that, and the gut feeling,
sure,
too, because I think you have to have a fair amount of following that intuition and so forth on there as well.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
No, I think it's genuine. You know, it's funny sometimes, and you've got to have this too. You've got thousands of people. Yeah, I know you have over 10,000 people that follow you on Twitter. Yeah, that's
cool.
A big deal. I mean, it's you know, that's a small city in some places. You know, it's bigger than a small city, and so, but you know that it's kind of like you got to kiss a few frogs kind of thing. So sometimes people will come to me and say, hey, I saw this horrible blog about you, and oh, hey, they're talking about this or that. And so it doesn't take you very long to realize, hey, I can see what this guy's intentions are. And I think that's what it comes down to. I think my good gut instincts come to when someone is genuinely trying to connect with me, genuinely trying to talk to me, genuinely trying to help me and not help themselves. And so there's a sense that you want to be nice to them. You want to reciprocate. You want to love them back. And at least that's the group of people that I've worked really well with. But the people that a guy shows up on Twitter and I've never seen him before and he says, hey, man, can you retweet this? Or, hey, can you do this? Or, you know, can you follow these three friends? Or how'd you like five more followers? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, you know, but good luck. Or
exactly.
I don't know if you run into this, but sometimes sometimes I'll like see somebody that I'm interested in, and I think, God, that guy's pretty cool. And then I will. There's a natural curiosity for me, like, well, I wonder who he's following, or I wonder who he thought was interesting. And sometimes that's how I'll find new people, because Twitter's like anything; it needs to be fed, and you can't just say, well, I've got a bunch of followers and that's it. I'm never going to do anything else. There is some work that's required. I don't always am successful. I try to spend a little bit of time every single day saying, okay, what I got to treat Twitter today like I did on my very first day. I got to go make some new friends. I'm the new kid in school. I'm going to walk up to people and say, hi, I'm Fred. Who are you? And with a big smile on my face. I think if I ever took the position of, hey, I'm so-and-so, and you need to come be nice to me before I'm nice to you, nah, no, it doesn't work. And I think the reason why anybody is successful.
I can't even hear that coming from you, though, knowing you. It's funny. It doesn't work.
No, what's funny, though, is I remember, it's like True Twit or something. It's where they ask you to validate that you're not a robot. You know what I'm talking about?
No, yeah, every once in a while somebody will come. So I'm bad at, like, direct messages, and so I might miss it if somebody's trying to validate me. I'm like, oh, you know, if you want to know I'm not a robot, just say hi. I'll say hi.
Yeah,
really,
you know,
not
it's
that
like,
hard.
I think about the 15 or 20 seconds or 30 seconds that I've got to prove that I'm not that I'm a person. And I think, no, if you want to, you're obviously not on right now because you're automating too much. And you can do that, you know. I see some people who, you know, get all these different services and they're not there. I mean, I know there's tweets coming out, but there's not a human behind it.
Yeah, you know, actually, I think you reach a level on Twitter to the point where you start getting asked that, because really the other day somebody sent me a tweet and it said, is this the real Elizabeth? And I'm like, oh, I'm trying to get that. I'm like, yeah. And I said, yes, this is me, and I'm on the retweet button, because I really do love to be on Twitter, and one of my favorite things about Twitter is retweeting people. Well, people can't comprehend that. They think it's got to be automated and everything like that. I'm like, no, it really is me sitting there pressing retweet, you know, kind of thing. So I got a kick out of that. I'm like, that's funny. And it made me think of you because, you know, you have, you know, many, many more followers than I do, and I'm thinking he must get that all the time. Is this really you? Or number two, you know, can you finance my project? Or number three, can I have some money or whatever? I just can't even imagine being you.
Get a lot of the money stuff. You know, get a lot of, can you retweet something? Or and the thing that my reaction is, when someone says that they've got a problem, I kind of ask myself, is it a finite problem or is it an infinite problem? A finite problem is, I stubbed my toe and I need a Band-Aid. Okay, all right, well, I can buy a Band-Aid. That seems like a good thing to do. An infinite problem is, I'm behind on my rent. And then I would say, well, why are you behind on your rent? Because I don't have a job. So I just need money for, you know, for rent. I'm like, well, wait a minute. Do you have any prospects for a new job? Oh, no prospects. So what's going to happen next month? What's going to happen 3 months from now? So they have an infinite problem that they're trying to solve with a finite amount of money. That doesn't work. It's kind of like, you remember over 8 years ago when Bush said, that's it, we have a war on terrorism. Well, wait a minute. Last time I checked, terrorism is an infinite problem.
Yeah.
You can't win a war on terrorism. You need to take that back, Mr. President, because we're going to be there a while. And sure enough, he didn't have his goals laid out correctly. He didn't explain to us what a win was in war, which is, it's obviously where nobody wins, but it's sad. Yeah.
Now, okay, so you said something just a few minutes ago, and you said, you know, if somebody genuinely wants to help me, how does somebody sitting here listening to this call possibly think that they could ever help you when it appears like you have everything going for you, everything going in the right direction? You're a CEO of this huge company. You have a book that's been, you know, How to Buy a Diamond's been in print since like 1990 or 1991.
Yeah.
You know, you're successful at everything you do. You design Super Bowl rings. You do everything. How could somebody possibly feel like they could contribute to your world?
You know this.
And I do. I know the answer.
Yeah. Well, look. An example I'll give you is, I remember a few years ago, I was at a McDonald's. Had no business at McDonald's. This isn't a commercial for McDonald's. But my wife just happens to love their fries. And she said, hey, can you pick me up some fries before you come home? I said, sure. And they have a little secret where they put a little bit of sugar on the fries, just for you know. But they're really tasty fries. So I go through, and you could tell this young lady has had a really difficult day. And the fries weren't that much money. It was, you know, like whatever, a few dollars. And so I handed her like a $10 bill, and she went to get the change. And I said, no, that's okay. Keep it. Thank you so much for waiting on me. Thank you so much for, you know, giving me the fries. I'm going to go make my wife happy, and happy wife, happy life. Thank you so much. And she starts crying. And I'm like, oh, no, what have I done? There's some law against tipping people at McDonald's. She's crying and bawling. I'm like, are you okay? And she says, I've been working here for 7 years. In all of 7 years, no one has ever given me a tip. Thank you so much. They just treat me like I'm a robot. They just treat me like a servant. They don't smile. They're not kind or this. If they're angry, they take it out on me. And so that's it. Look, I don't care what a person may own or what they may have accomplished. There is no random act of kindness that doesn't feel wonderful and fantastic. Every day when I get up, my reaction is, all right, there's a serendipity to life. So everybody I meet, or it looks like I'm going to meet, or I'm about to collide into, there's something that I'm supposed to give them. Maybe it's a smile. Maybe it's a hug. Maybe I'm to listen to them. I saw this great line in a blog the other day, and it said something that when you meet people in life, they're going to be people that are going to use you. They're going to be people that are going to test you, people that are going to teach you, and there'll be some people that'll bring out the best in you. But the really, really unique people do all of it. They test you, they teach you, they use you, and being used isn't a bad thing. We want to be used up before we go. We want to be used up for our talents, and we want people to bring out the best in us. And so, quite honestly, I'm no different than anybody else. We're here to love and be loved. So when someone says, hey, I really like that quote, or gee whiz, that really made my day, or I had one guy who wrote me, and we later continued the conversation off of Twitter, and he said to me in a long letter, he said, I want you to know that my brother has been in and out of rehab for a heroin addiction that almost killed him, has cost our family dramatically, and he would steal from the family for his drug habit. Yeah. And then finally, after his last time in the treatment center, he came home, and I found him on Twitter, and he had you up. And he was smiling at some of the things that you said. And then I realized, wait a second, there's something that's going on here. So I went back to some of your favorite, you know, quotes, and I wrote them on little sticky notes, and we have them all over the house. So when he wakes up, he reads one. When he goes to the bathroom, he reads one. He sees one on the mirror. He sees one at the kitchen table. And so every time he thinks that he's not worth it, he's not good enough, he reads something that's positive and it makes him feel good. And so I want you to know that my brother has now kicked the habit, and he's now got his first real-time job, and he wanted to thank me for it and stuff like that. So I'm just like anybody else. All of us want to be loved. There's a million ways to love us. And it's not about buying things or that kind of stuff. It's just, it's being kind. It's being caring. It's being you. So many people put on all these hats of, I'm a doctor, I'm a lawyer, I'm a policeman. No. Who are you underneath? Yeah. Who are you underneath all those masks? Let me get to talk to that person. And I realize that when I'm my most vulnerable, I am who I am. But when I try to be pompous, and sometimes my wife tells me I'm that way and I'm full of myself and she has to bring me down to earth, but nah, it's impossible to love anybody without being vulnerable. And so be vulnerable.
We had a talk, you and I had a talk the other day about how I love that you don't talk in quotes. I mean, verbally talk in quotes. Because there's nothing really more frustrating to me. I mean, I really have a hard time. Sometimes I'll get people on the radio show and it'll be like, hi, Elizabeth. Well, life is good. And, you know,
life is like a box of chocolates.
Chocolates and life's good. And
apparently I'm talking to a nut.
That's funny. And the whole time I'm like, I love quotes just as much as the next person. I love a good quote, but for some reason, I'm different. Yeah. I don't know why, and my brain doesn't store them. My brain they go in one ear and out the other, and I really mean that seriously. Like, so I could never. I always feel like I could never be one of those people who gives this giant, profound speech of, you know, quoting somebody, because I can't. You could quote something profound, and I won't remember it.
Yeah,
unless
I
write it down.
I can't remember my quotes either. It's horrible.
You
because
can't. Okay, good. I can't remember mine.
No. I mean, there's a few. There's like a half a dozen that I remember.
Okay.
But no, people sometimes. I thought this was kind of funny. Somebody quoted something to me, and I went and I wrote him back, and I said, "That's brilliant." And they said, "It's your quote. Don't you recognize it?" And I went, "Oh, well, there must have been a reason why I liked it. Gee whiz, I thought it was kind of catchy, but I'd forgotten saying it." And so. Yeah, no, because if you're speaking and memorized quotes, how can you possibly be present? You're worrying about thinking about something. The slowest form of creation is thinking.
Yeah, that is just that's a tough interview, too, when somebody's talking quotes. It's a tough speech to listen to, too.
Yeah.
And do you know why, then, why quotes are so popular? I can't figure it out. I mean, they're kind of motivational. But I can't remember them. So for me, I have to write them down. Why do you think why do you think quotes are such a popular thing? And they're really all over the internet. And there's I mean, you have a book. It's Fredisms, isn't it?
Yeah.
Quotes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are quotes
so
popular?
Well, you know, what I find is our brains, in many respects, are very similar to computers. Stupid in, stupid out kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So if you have a computer and it's not running so good, you'd say, well, wait a second, why isn't it executing the command that I'm asking it to do? And the computer, if it could talk to you, and some of them can, would say, well, I wasn't programmed for that. What do you expect? I was programmed to do this, that, and the other. And what I've noticed about the really best quotes, they're not really quotes. They're programs. They're little tiny programs that we absorb into our brain and go, oh, gee whiz. They're rules of thumb. Gee whiz. Okay. If I remember that, I can use that in this situation. Boy, that's awful handy. Some people should be fed with 10-foot spoons. Okay, yeah. Okay, still love them, but love them from a distance. That's a good idea. I like that one. That's a good one and stuff. And so I think that's why they are. I think we naturally want to be as prepared we can for life, but yet that's the paradox. The most fun I have in life is being surprised. Now, that wasn't always the case. I used to tell my wife, I want no surprises. You got something going on. You're doing something. You let me know because I don't like surprises. And then I realized, life is supposed to be a surprise. So I try to, when I wake up in the morning, think, okay, what can I do to surprise myself? and then maybe I can surprise others. Because, you know, we can't take, I mean, life is to be enjoyed and just gobbled up, and really not to be taken too seriously. I mean, because you, otherwise you're going to lose the joy in it.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's talk about serious stuff for a second, because
sure.
And
like your book, your Pinky Doodle book.
My Pinky Doodle Bug book.
I know I got
that
wrong. But
no,
you know
you got
I'm
it right.
About.
It's you. You got it right. And,
did I?
And,
okay, cool.
Yeah, no.
Everybody go buy her Pinky Doodle book.
Oh, yeah, I love that book. But yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
I want to talk about you though. This is
oh,
this,
okay,
this
sorry.
This is a Fred
sorry.
Show.
You'll get my bill.
Exactly. You're so funny. Okay, health. I want to talk about your health for a little bit.
Sure.
Are we allowed to do that on here? Because
sure, of course.
You're a real. This is a huge thing that I don't know if
yeah,
people know this about you.
Yeah.
I know I do, and I don't
yeah.
know if it's widely known that you're a stroke survivor.
No, stroke, cancer, you name it.
Really? Okay, so
yeah.
How has health changed the way you think about life and how you interact with others?
Well, you know, I think what you have to go back to, I think for me, at least, is my first really brush with death, or you could argue with death in and of itself. I was 3 years old. I had spinal meningitis. Doctor comes out, tells my mom, "I'm sorry, your son's dead." And she gets very angry at that, picks up the doctor, pushes him against the wall, and says, "You bring my son back." He goes in there. He paddles my chest. I pop back. My heart pops up again. He walks out. I'm still in a coma. He walks out and says to my mother, "I hope you're happy." He's in a coma, but because of the amount of time that elapsed without him, his brain getting oxygen, you're going to have a vegetable if he ever wakes up. My mom stayed by my side for I don't know how many weeks and held my hand. And one day my eyes did open. And when they opened, the first words out of my mouth were spinach, because Popeye was my hero, and I just figured I needed some spinach to be strong. And she whispered in my ear, "God saved you for a very special reason. Don't ever forget it. You were here to help people." And as I started to grow up, I tend to have a little bit of a Midas touch. And by the time I was in my early 20s, I was kind of financially independent. I didn't really have to worry about money. Things were going really good. And I really started getting full of myself. I mean, I thought I was the smartest guy. And I don't think I ever had a Brad Pitt complex, but I figured I could compensate with money. And so I just, you know, I was buying all of these things and stuff, and I was bragging and all of these horrible.
Okay, I wish I would have known you. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, I was.
You
would have not.
I would not. I would have hated you.
No, that was
you.
A.
Oh,
no,
I would have hated
a,
you. Ooh.
I was pompous and I was, and I used my intelligence as a weapon, and it was mean to people. It was horrible because, like, I'm special and you're not, and stuff. And apparently, you know, God or the universe has a sense of humor to a point. So at age 35, apparently he'd had enough with all this, and I had a stroke. I was paralyzed on the left side of my body, right hemisphere stroke, lost 20 years of memory. So imagine coming out of a stroke, I seeing my wife, not knowing who she is. My brain had kind of gone back into the, you know, 20 years prior, and, you know, I'm seeing cell phones. I don't know what a cell phone is. My brain had basically erased the last 20 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I got through all that and I got through those health issues, my mom again reminded me, I think you got a little off track there. You weren't
yeah.
brought back the first time for self-indulgence. You were brought back for other people, and you weren't doing very well with that. And I was like, hey, you don't have to. Fair enough. Fair
mm-hmm.
enough. And it did. It really was. It was, I think, because I didn't remember except the stories my mom would tell me about the three-year-old and stuff, you know, who had spinal meningitis. And I did. I think it took the stroke for me to wake up. I mean, really, really wake up afterwards and go, wow, I just hadn't got it. It wasn't about stuff. It wasn't about things. It was about us. It was about loving each other. It was about compassion and gratitude for everything. And I said, okay. And then I started noticing all these people with all these serious faces about, I got to go to work, and I got to do this, and I got to be on time, and I can't be running late, and I got to go do this, and I got to do that. And I'm like, whoa. You need to trash that to-do list. It's going to be over soon. Who are the people you're not saying I love you to? Who are the people you're not hugging? Who are the people that you're in such a rush that you're missing? One day, they're going to be gone. We spend half our life accumulating things. We spend the other half of our life giving them back. So before you have to say goodbye to your mother or your father or your sister, to yourself, be appreciative. I don't know if your listeners know this, but the last time Elizabeth and I were talking on the telephone, you mentioned, you know, Fred, there's ambulances outside my door. And we finished the conversation only to find out that while you and I were talking, your next-door neighbor in his kitchen had a heart attack and died. He woke up that morning, but he didn't finish the day. And so life is so precious. And so I kind of try to remind people of that. And so when they want to complain that they got a toothache or their kid needs braces or they got too little money or too much money or this or that, I'm like, really? In the big scheme of things, there's somebody out there who's got it a whole lot worse than you. A lot of us tend to make our own problems worse by the way we think about them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, too, in that same conversation that we were having, you and I were talking about potentially our family making a move
yeah.
in the Hartford area. And remember
the
conversation we were having? We were like, you know, we've kind of got it. We've got our life kind of really nice right now where nobody's got – we've kind of got California smiles and going on here in Maine, if that makes any sense. Because, you know, we're both really mellow. And, you know, we're like, do we want to really upset the apple cart and go back into a situation where we're doing that hour commute there and hour commute back and all this stuff? And, you know, we're just like – my husband and I looked at each other and we're like, God, that sounds exhausting.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because we both kind of work from home right now. And
yeah.
I wouldn't
yeah.
say we're complacent by any stretch.
Sure.
But everybody's generally happy, you know, at that level where you're just kind of peaceful.
Yeah.
And we look around and we notice the same thing you do where nobody's, you know, we can go in the grocery store and we want to put smiles. I want to go around and just touch everyone and smile.
Yeah.
I do. I want to just tap people on the shoulder and smile because people look so that's the number one place where people look cranky to me for some reason is in the grocery store. And I cannot for the life of me figure it out. They're cranky in line. They're cranky picking out their milk. I'm like, hey, you've got money for – back it up a little bit. You've got money for food even. You should
be
happy.
If you stop to think about what it took to put milk on that shelf, what it took to put bread – or peanut butter, or any of those things, the number of people, the number that were involved to stock that place, that there are places in this world where they wake up, 3 billion people wake up every single day and wonder, what am I going to eat today? You know, that's tough. The number one form of energy is burning wood or getting clean drinking water. Unclean drinking water kills more people than any other cause in the world. And I'm like, wow, that seems like something we should work on. That seems like something we should fix. And so, I'm with you. The number of people that don't understand their blessings, I don't know, but maybe I was there. You know, I was in my sleeping coma where I was so full of myself that I didn't see what was right in front of me.
Really interesting because I had meningitis right after I was born. I was born really premature and then got meningitis, and I'm not supposed to be here really either.
All the good looking kids got meningitis.
Exactly. Yes, we're a club, meningitis club. But then I share your resuscitation story part of that too with food allergies. You know, we've talked about food allergies before, and
yeah.
You know, just that, you know, I've been resuscitated from. from something like, you know, eating an almond. You know, that that's deadly to me. So, you know, I think about I think a lot about counting. We'll go on to
that. So don't open that Almond Joy I sent you for Christmas.
Yeah, no, don't. Don't send me Almond Joy. But, you know, I do. I think about blessings a lot, and I think about how is there a way to teach that where do you think people just have to learn that on their own, or do you think you can show people how to find their blessings? Yeah.
No, I taught a class. I had a young lady. I gave a speech once to a high school class. And after the class, this young lady by the name of Nadia Geary came up to me, and she said, do you have anybody who at your company, where I could work at your company, and I could be an apprentice, and I could learn things and stuff? And I said, well, I hadn't thought about it. She goes, well, I want to do it. I want to come this summer, and I want to be there, and I want to intern and stuff like that. And I said, okay. So she came in, and I quickly saw that this was a young lady that had the best of everything. And she was not appreciative of none of it. I mean, she had the cell phone and all of the goodies and all the different things. And I said to her, I said, you need to learn how to be appreciative of the things that you've got. So what I did was I wrote down, I said, write down on a sheet of paper all the things that you typically, quote, possessions that you can't live without. And she writes them all down. Cell phone, TV, computer, all of these.
You can't live without?
That she can't live without. She said she can't live without.
She can't live without a cell phone. Oh, boy.
Yeah. I can't live without this. I can't live without this. And I said to her, okay. And we actually, over a period of weeks, started eliminating every single one of these things. She hated me so much. I took all these things away from her.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposite reaction happened. She was actually said, you know what? I hate the day I started to work for you. This is horrible. You've made my life miserable. I'm a social outcast and this and the other. And I said, okay, you're still obviously not appreciative. So what I did was I had contacted her folks to make sure that this was okay. I said, what we're going to do now is we're going to take away something that you really are taking for granted. We're going to start with your vision. And we actually had someone who covered her eyes, taped up her eyes so she couldn't take it off. And for a period of 3 days, she had to live in total blackness. And she had to go out and see what it was like to be blind and stuff. And that was the one I think that finally it clicked in.
Get some religion after that?
Yeah, she found some religion after that. And the amazing part was when I first started taking things away from her, we all can learn to live without material things. But things like eyesight or love, and it wasn't until I started removing those things that she started to be really appreciative of how fantastic those things were. So, yeah, I think the people who say, you know, I don't have blessings or I'm complaining or this, that, and the other, I know this. Whatever we focus on gets bigger. So if you're focusing on your troubles, well, that's all you're looking at. That's all you're seeing. And so sometimes it is, I guess, if you're closer to that than the other things, sometimes you do need other people to kind of point out to you what are the cool things you've got. But it's a process. Some people don't want to know. Some people want to just, you know, believe that they're spited and the world is out to get them and the world is a horrible place. Well, guess what? If you believe the world is a horrible place, well, that's the world you're going to see.
Getcha. Well, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you attract the type of people will surround you too. It's an interesting phenomenon.
Oh yeah.
Can you tell me the story? Can you tell me some stories about your I want to say grandfather.
Sure. Anyone you like. Obviously, you may not know them all. My grandfather was a cool guy. He was a rancher, and he was always teaching me one lesson or another and stuff. And I think this is a story you're thinking about. If not, I'll tell another one. But there was one time where I was on the farm, and I learned one of the things I learned working on a farm was I don't want to work on a farm. So
that's what I learned working on a farm too. I'm good.
Yeah, that was the very first lesson was I clearly have to make myself educated enough that I don't have to do this. So
as close as I'm ever going to get to a farm again is having two goats, Toro and Lawn Boy. That's it.
Yeah, yeah.
Never going to have a
So my grandpa pulls me aside. I remember after we were putting up some fence once and my hands were all bloodied and stuff. And And he said to me, he said, Freddie, I went by Freddie then. He says, well, Freddie, it's obvious to me that one day you're going to have some money. Because you see how hard I work here, you're going to find some other ways to make some money. He says, but I want you to make me a promise. And I'm like, Granddad, if we can just go back to the ranch and, you know, have some menudo, some soup or something, anything where we just don't have to be out here anymore, I'll promise you anything. And he's like, well, okay, no, but I want you to take this seriously. I said, okay, I take it seriously. He says, in your life, I can tell you're gonna do the hard work and you're going to have money. He says, now, the thing about it is there are going to be people that are going to come to you and they're going to ask for money and they're going to ask to borrow it. And I'm like, thinking that I know where this is going, yes, Granddad, we've got family. We've got to make sure we take care of them. He goes, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm like, what? He says, what I'm saying is I want you to follow one simple rule when it comes to deciding who you're going to give money to. And I'm like, okay, what's the rule? He says, if you love them, don't give them the money that they're asking for. I'm like, huh? Because if you love them, don't give them the money. And if you don't, if they're a nuisance, give them the money. It's the easiest way to get them out of your life because you're not going to see them again. And I got it that what happens is when you've got somebody who's maybe in your family who has an infinite problem, not a finite problem, I need 10 bucks, but has an infinite problem that they themselves created, you don't help them by bailing them out because you don't teach them how to get out of their own mess. So the only thing that's going to happen is they're going to end up in the mess over and over and over again.
And you're going to end up in it with them.
Yeah, no, they'll drag you down with you. Look, if you see it's like my wife won't go ice skating with me because when we ice skate, we tend to hold hands. And she knows that if I fall down and she's holding my hand, she's coming down with me. So it's you know, I remember a few years ago when Michael Jackson was kind of heading off the cliff and you look at some of the people that he had around him that were trying to guide him away from the cliff. They asked him, why didn't you keep him from killing himself? And their answer was, I tried. And when it came apparent that the person wouldn't listen to anything I had to say, I didn't want to be collateral damage once they went off the cliff. And so, yeah, that's one of the lessons I learned from my grandfather, a very early lesson about how to handle money, how to respect money, and that you don't do anybody any favors when you just give them money. If we just throw money at poverty, if we just throw money at malaria or illness, there's not enough money in the world to solve it. You've got to teach people who have gotten themselves into these situations what can they do as a preventive measure before it becomes a catastrophic problem.
Did you, you know, right now on this call, did you ever think that you would get to a point where you were doing like motivational speaking and inspirational speaking? Have you kind of always known that about yourself, that you would motivate other people?
Not a clue. I've given about 25. Someone asked me to add it up. And so I actually added up. I went, wow, I've given a lot of speeches, little speeches, medium speeches, big speeches. But I've given over about 25,000 speeches in my life. That's a lot of speeches.
Wow.
And I never thought of it. I knew that I loved to teach. And that I knew that when I taught something, I learned it better myself. I don't know why, but if I was learning something and I was excited about learning something and then I told someone else, hey, look at this cool thing I'm learning, and they go, what is this? And I go, well, this is what I'm figuring out. It's kind of cool. That in explaining it to other people, it resonated more with me. And I was like, wow, to the degree you love, you will be loved. And I think that's why I love teaching so much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, did I know I would be in front of audiences and I would move people and stuff like that? Man, no, not a clue. But that's just the way it kind of all has fallen into place.
Yeah, and do you okay, here's where I know our brains differ, just from having talked to you a few times before. You have all these neat.
Well, you're smarter, so that's.
Oh no, 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 no! You're way smarter.
You're a woman. Women are smarter than men. Everybody, so if you're listening.
Well, I have found that we're all very smart, and
okay.
Then there's something very dumb about all of us. That's what I found.
Yes.
Everybody is very, very smart in some of the things they do, but everybody has a really dumb spot.
Yeah, dumb and dumber. Yes.
Very funny. And what you're dumb about, who knows? But yeah. Anyway. All right. So the one thing I know that I absolutely just adore about you is that.
Oh, I love you too.
I love you too. But you are so. I love it when people are well read.
Yeah.
And I also. I love it when people are so well read, but they don't. And they know you're not, but they act like it's no big whoop. And they go, you know,
yeah.
Here, these are a few ones you should read too. Can you give us. I also love the fact that you have this memorized because I can ask you this question and most people can't answer it. Can you give me maybe 5 books that you think people listening should just without question read no matter what?
Well, there's a book by Stuart Diamond.
Other than your own.
There's a book by Stuart Diamond called Getting More. And it sounds kind of like a greedy kind of book. You know, it sounds like, well, gee whiz, you're trying to get more, you're trying to take advantage. But it's really not. What I like about the book is it kind of explains, you know, human nature and, you know, human dignities and says, hey, listen, you've got this wonderful life, and really the secret to getting more in life is giving more, you know. But that's one book. I really like that book. Now, I'll tell you a book I'm reading right now that has just got me stymied. It's a very hard book. So if there's anybody out there who likes very difficult books that are very, very, very deep, but this is a book that's a 25-year-old book. It's a book I wouldn't have found. It came up in a conversation in a meal I had about a week ago. And the book is called Finite and Infinite Games. And I think it's by James Carse, C-A-R-S-E. But if you just were to look up Finite and Infinite Games, it's a small little tiny book, but it's one of these ones where you read a sentence and go, what did that mean? And you read a sentence and go, huh? I don't get it. So if there are people out there who really want to learn a lot about how the universe works and really consider themselves pretty, you know, they like puzzles, that's the puzzle book for people to get. I would say that's a wonderful book.
Mm-hmm.
Covey's book, I don't see how anybody couldn't love the son's book, not the dad's book, but The Speed of Trust by Stephen Covey. God, I love that book. It's a book that basically says, look, in any relationship, if it's going to be successful, there has to be trust. So So how do you establish trust in a relationship? And so since life is about relationships, that's one of the books, like if you don't read it, you're in trouble. And that's a wonderful, wonderful book. I'm trying to think. David Brooks had a book he wrote a few years ago called The Social Animal, which I thought was just a breathtaking book, just a really wonderful, wonderful book, because it showed how some people are living in the world of hypocrisy, and it shows you through this really beautiful story these people that, you know, they call them the swells, like, oh, I'm going to my yacht, and I'm going to have tea, and then maybe we'll smoke a cigar, and have, what's a good wine that's going to go with the caviar?
And then so, I'm going to come over and drop off all 4 of my kids. Ruin their party.
The social animal strips away all of these BS masks that people wear and say, look, Stop it. Be real. Be yourself. You know, what's the old joke? Everybody else is taken. So, certainly those are all wonderful books. If anybody wants to read a book like that's an old book, I'm sure you've heard of Napoleon. You've heard of Napoleon Hill?
Yep.
Yeah. Most people have read his book, like Think and Grow Rich or something like that. I've actually not read that book, but people say it's a wonderful book. There's a book he wrote that a lot of people don't know about that he wrote prior to his, quote, big book. It was called The Law of Success. in 16 Lessons by Napoleon Hill goes back to 1927. And I thought to myself, man, there's too many cool books that are out there right now that I'm not going to go back and read an 84-year-old book. But the guy's name just kept popping up, and I went, all right, enough of this Hill guy. You know, I mean, he obviously was the Anthony Robbins of his day. Let me see what this guy was about. But I can tell you that I took my time with the book. I took a couple of months. You can get it on Kindle, by the way, or anyway. But I took a couple of months reading the book, and wow, did I enjoy it. I just one of the cool things I got out of the book was understanding how few people really save the proper amount of money for the future and how important a savings account is. There's so many cool things that he teaches in the book, but the idea, you know, to live within your means, live below your means, there's so many people that aren't doing that these days. You know, I was looking at USA Today this morning, and it was just a really sad story. It said that currently one out of every two Americans in the U.S. is poor or living in poverty. And I'm thinking, wow, one out of two, 50% of people are living in low-income families or, quote, defined as poor. And it was when you read the article, it was so just mind-blowing to me that if you look at the income of people from 1979 that were making maybe, let's say, $15,000 or $16,000 or $17,000 a year, which you can imagine that's not that much money, that since 1979, so we're talking over 30 years, their income has not gone up, it's gone down. Yeah. Imagine 30 years go by and you're making less than you made in 79. That's nuts. And yet they said that the top 5% of us are making 60, 70%, whatever the number was, more. And so I know this, that as a country, we're only as strong as the weakest people on the team. And until we find a way to teach them how to stop learning helplessness and how to start believing in who they are and to understand that God doesn't make mistakes, He didn't start with them, and that they're blessing and that in some way or form that there's a genius in all of us. Each one of us can do something incredible that nobody else could do. You heard about that push-up guy, right?
I don't know the push-up. I don't. You're going to have to tell me the push-up guy.
This guy was basically going around and, you know, he's being told his whole life everybody's got a special gift. And that once you figure out your special gift, the world is your oyster. Well, he didn't have a special gift per se. I mean, you know, finally somebody asked him, come on, there's got to be something you can do better than anyone else. And he says, well, I can do a lot of push-ups. And like,
oh, yeah, you've told me this before, yeah.
And the guy goes, really? He says, yeah. He says, when I was young, I had a small chest, and so I wanted to do a lot of push-ups. And so it turns out I can do more push-ups than anyone else. And then he says, well, I bet you there's a lot of people who would like to be able to do as many push-ups. If you figured out a system, well, they made an app for it. The guy's a millionaire now because of his 100 push-up app. It just goes to show you. I mean, if a guy can become a millionaire by showing how to do a good push-up and how to build up your upper body, anything's possible. Anything's possible.
Anything is, yeah. Do you think that, okay, so keep an eye on time here, too, just so you know, we have like
sure.
6 minutes left.
6 minutes.
So I don't want to ask anything too elaborate here, but do you think that, do you really think anything's possible, for one thing, and do you really judge success by money? For example, I feel more successful than I ever have. I'm happy. I have the best ever you network. I have my book, Pinky Doodlebug. I am just chugging along. I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, damn, girl, you know, I'm happy. I'm doing my thing. I'm doing what I want to do. Is that the definition of success to you? Or does it mean that, damn girl, I'm doing what I'm doing and I need to walk out to that mailbox out there and there's got to be $1 million paycheck sitting in there?
The best and by the way, if you don't have a definition for success, you're never going to get there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you get in your car every single morning and you say to yourself, all right, I'm in my car and I'm ready to go, but you don't know where you're going, yeah, how are you going to know when you get there? You've got to have – each one of us has to define what success is. Having said that, I did find a great definition of success, and it's what I use and which I'm finding lots of people are using. And this was the best definition of success that I found was, success is the ability to do what you want, when you want, without hurting anybody else. I like that. It works for me.
Yeah, I think so. I thought you were going to say in where you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good. Yeah, that's a great definition of success. So if you apply that, so success doesn't mean you have to be. So many people are hang success around money. I mean, they really do.
They want to be able to measure it. You know, they have magazines and they say these are the Fortune 500 and these are this and that. The only way, because otherwise everybody's successful by that measure. But no, they want to rank it. They want somebody to have the title. People that are living in this limited world are about titles and about property and look at all my stuff and that kind of stuff. And maybe for them, that's what success is. But look, last time I checked, there was a lot of Egyptians who had a lot of gold, a lot of cool stuff, and they literally tried to take it with them, and they don't got it. We do.
So to me, I mean, I sort of define success as, like, I you know, your definition is great, and you know, applying that definition for me, for example, I define success as like maybe setting just a simple goal to do something. For example, like I want to lose 20 pounds. I've done that, but I mean, say I want to lose 20 pounds. Okay, I've lost the 20 pounds. That right there, that one act, that makes me feel successful. Is that an example of success?
Yeah, finite success. And I think that there's a difference between finite success and infinite success. Finite success is setting a goal that actually has an end to it. The problem with the person who says, I want to lose 20 pounds, isn't that they won't lose 20 pounds. It's just that after they lose the 20 pounds, they stop. And that's why they regress back. They had the wrong goal. The goal should have been, hey, regardless of what I weigh, I want to be healthy.
Good. Thank you.
So what do I have to do to be healthy? Well, I got to watch what I eat. I have to exercise. And so that's an infinite, healthy is an infinite problem per se, and it doesn't come to an end. You're not trying to just, well, I'm just going to lose 20 pounds. So you attack a health issue with infinite problem has to be solved with an infinite solution, not a finite solution. So, yes, I think that's good to have finite goals in our life. I think that's critical. But I think you got to look at the big picture. Wait a minute, why am I losing weight? Because there are people who have lost so much weight that they die because they're anorexic or this. So they forgot somewhere along the way it wasn't about society looking at me. It's got to be about healthy. I got to be healthy. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. I love asking you questions like that because I know you take them and you change them all around to the broader, the bigger scope. So it's always fun to ask you things. Okay, so with 2 minutes left, and it's really just narrow it down to a minute even because we've got to close out.
Yeah.
We didn't even mention diamonds, which I had a feeling we wouldn't.
That's okay.
You know, I mean, can you give the website anyway? It's Diamond Cutters International. And your book, How to Buy a Diamond, you're going to come out with another edition of that book, aren't you, pretty soon?
Yeah, the seventh edition of How to Buy a Diamond comes out in April.
Oh, cool. Good for
you.
Yeah. What else?
I think if anybody wants to remember one thing about diamonds is just go look in the mirror. Each and one of us is a diamond. Each of us grew in an environment of pressure and temperature, and we're here. We're on this planet. We made it against all odds. So that's it. Once you understand the beauty that's inside you, you'll be able to recognize it in others.
Beautiful. All right. Well, on that note, it didn't seem like an hour, but thank you for the
phone. Wow, yeah.
I know.
I purposely turned all the clocks away, but when you told me there's only 6 minutes left, I went, wow, that went by quick.
And now 60 seconds. So, okay, we're going to wind up. So thank you for being with us. And we'll
thank
follow
you for having
in,
me.
Yeah,
Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
Happy holidays.
Yeah. I can say Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays and everything that everybody's celebrating. And thank you so much for everybody listening today. There's been a lot of people listening to this show. Please follow Fred on Twitter. It's FredCuellar on Twitter. Great person to follow. And we'll see you guys on Sunday night. We have Eileen
Davidson, actress Eileen Davidson, on Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern with us for the full hour as well. So thanks, everybody, for joining us, and have a great weekend ahead. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.